This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. List it in minutes with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Hey folks, welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas, flying solo on the intro today. We have got a hell of a show today, in my opinion. One of the best ones I feel like I've done lately as far as learning stuff. I really like learning things when I'm, I guess you'd call it, interviewing people. And on this week's show, I talk with Shane Motzenbacher. Hopefully I got that right. With the National Deer Association about how drought affects deer health and antler growth specifically. In our area of Missouri, I don't know if we're actually in a drought, but it's been dry the last two summers. All you got to do is look at pretty much any pond in this entire area. They're all low. Haven't been getting rain. I think we're like 10 plus inches low outside of the last few weeks. We've actually been getting rain, which is good. So I don't know if we're actually in a drought, but that's what I'm going to call it. So, and I think much of the state has kind of seen some of that, and a lot of the Midwest and certain areas, I know like the West has been getting a lot of rain. I think they're taking it all from us. So that's what we're kind of talking about today. It's a very interesting topic. If you're a hunter that is going after a deer that has horns coming out of its head, could interest you. And if you're a hunter just going for meat, it could interest you as well as far as, you know, how big the deer get compared to when it's normal and nice and wet. So anyway, that's what we're doing today. Let me get through the sponsors right quick and we'll hop into the show because it's a really interesting show that I don't want you to wait for. So we got Weber Outfitters. We were just out at their first annual Try and Buy event. You heard us live last week with them. Lots of fun. Hoping to go out there again next year. I think they're going to announce dates pretty soon. So be, you know, follow their social media and check them out for those date announcements. WeberOutfitters.com, Athlon Optics. Super excited to get into some of their new thermals when they come out. They just announced that, I guess you'd say, not too long ago. And I'm going to be getting another scope, I think, soon. So we'll see. I don't know what I'm doing, but I got a lot of ideas on my mind about Athlon. So going to be excited to do some stuff with them coming up. We actually, I don't want to ruin it, but we just did a photo thing with them, and it was lots of fun. Got to meet, you know, Jimmy and I forget the other guy's name, sorry, but it was lots of fun. Me, Micah, and Andy will probably talk about it at some point, but it was weird as hell because it was just weird. I mean, you know, you kind of feel like you're a model or some shit, and it's, I don't know. It was odd, but lots of fun. I'm glad we got to do that with them. So check them out. Find a dealer near you. If you don't know one, I'm sure all the dealers they use are good people, but Weber is a dealer of theirs. Obviously, you can get a hold of Weber. We know another guy in the Casey area that's really good. Jesse Bunger's a terrific guy, too. So if you don't know any good dealers, get a hold of us. We can point you somewhere, too. We don't have any ties with Jesse. Obviously, we work with Weber. But, hey, check them out. AthlonOptics.com. On X, use our code MWW20 for 20%. Check out some of their new features. They keep coming out with new features. Really have been on my computer a lot lately, getting ready for Wyoming, using my Onyx, using some of those features that we have talked to our contact at Onyx about, and you'll be hearing, hopefully here in the next few weeks. Camo Fire, get on that app. That's the only way I use Camo Fire anymore. I don't get on the website, only the app. So if I were you, I would just go download the app and move on with your life. And enjoy the daily deals that you get. Black Ovis, use our code MWW10 for 10% off. When's this going to come out? Mid-August or late August, something like that. So it's getting close to hunting season. There's a lot of gear that you could be getting. I just realized I need to get some more lighted knocks, so I'll probably hop on there and order some. And they kind of got everything, man. They're an online retailer. I'm going to be getting some saddle stuff, I think, soon. From there too, so just a little bit of everything, man. If you can think of it, they probably have it. Check them out, blackovis.com. Huntworth Gear, this will come out. Make sure I'm right with you folks. On the 22nd, so you will have, as of the day this comes out, you will have 5 days left, I believe. The sale ends on the 27th for their Black Friday and fall or something like that sale, which is 30% off. So screw our code. Go save yourself 15% more and save 30% on any of your stuff. They've got a new system builder. I'm having a hard time thinking today. So, yeah, it's a system builder. It's pretty cool. You can kind of, you know, click on what kind of game you're hunting or going after, and then you can kind of build the system from there. So it's pretty cool. They've got two awesome patterns, Tarnin and Disruption. I own both. I've always been a fan of digital camo. So I've got a lot more Disruption stuff than I do Tarnin, but I'm starting to kind of like that Tarnin too. So check them out, huntworthgear.com, Alps Outdoors. It is their 30th anniversary. I don't know if y'all knew that. So use the code 2023 Woods Water for 30% off with them. They're a terrific company, Missouri-based. I'll be using my Elite Pack out in Wyoming. They've got a really cool new set of bino harnesses as well that are super quiet. If you guys listen to the show, you know I'm not a huge bino harness guy. Micah and Andy both love them. But if I was going to be wearing one, that one kind of takes the cake. The way it opens up is the biggest thing for me. I like it. So I'm going to try to use more of it, and that's going to be the one I'm using. But yeah, check them out, alpsoutdoors.com. Use that code and save yourself, like I said, 30%. That's a pretty big savings. Zamberland boots, Zamberland USA.com. Use any of the check out any of the boots. We specifically only run a few pair of theirs. I've got the Lynx and the Leopards that I really like. Andy really likes the Crestas. Micah really likes his Baltoros. He's also got the Lynx. And I don't remember what else Andy has, but I know that he loves his Crestas. So, you know, I mean, you know, we've only got basically four of theirs that I can think off the top of my head that are really freaking awesome. And, you know, they're high-quality boots. So check them out. Reveal Cameras by Tacticam. Easy enough to set up. Obviously, we've talked about it. We just had Ben on our show. You guys can, you know, see for yourself when you get them. We actually, at the Weber Outfitters Try and Buy event, kind of taught a few people how to use the cameras. And it's so damn easy. It's kind of easy to explain it to you. Download the app, set the camera up. It's done like that. So really, really cool, and some really awesome features on the app. So if you, I didn't realize this, I thought only if you tagged a buck you could do weather, but if you have a folder that you set up for a specific buck, let's say you name a buck Bob, and you put all the pictures of Bob in that folder, you can filter the weather data just for that folder, and it'll give you all the weather information just for that buck. That's cool. I found that out just a few days ago when I was doing it the other way, and it's pretty damn sweet, man. So check it out. And then last but not least, our buddy Dustin with Habitat Works. Mention us when you call. Get 15% off any service, 816-752-7390. Dustin is proficient in almost every aspect of that, you know, land management, timber stand improvement, forestry mulching, mapping and planning, and obviously prescribed fire, as you heard a few weeks ago on our show. That is the sponsors for today. We appreciate everything they do for us. We wouldn't be doing this show if we didn't have them. And also, you listeners, we wouldn't be doing this show without you guys. We love interacting with you all. Send us messages. Send us reply to us on social media. And, you know, give us a 5-star review if you feel so inclined. And then check out our website. We do have a website, MissouriWoodsAndWater.com. We're trying to add to our gear pages to give you guys more information about what we use, what we like, what we don't like, along with video. It's not going very quickly because, you know, we all work full-time, got families, and it's hard to get stuff done sometimes, but we're working on it, man. Anyways, that is the intro for today. We appreciate everybody listening. Let's get into the show with Shane with National Deer Association about the drought. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. All right, with me today, Nate, is all by himself today. So we've got Shane Motzenbacher, I said that correctly, with National Deer Association. Shane, what's up, man?
Oh, not much, man. Just glad to be here.
Shane is a fellow resident of the Missouri outdoors, born and raised in Missouri, it sounds like. So before we get into today's topic, which is going to be how drought affects antler growth, pretty topical, at least for us in this area, across Missouri, really, for the last few summers. Shane, why don't you introduce yourself, tell us kind of a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do for NDA, and then on the tail end of it, I want you to give me what your favorite thing about the Missouri outdoors is.
Yeah, I am Shane Motzenbacher with the National Deer Association. My actual title is Deer Outreach Specialist. So that's a fancy way to tell you, tell people about deer and get them interested in deer. And it kind of, that position has changed and morphed a little bit in the last few years with what we've been doing here at NDA, and grown into something where we're not only taking care of landowner cooperatives, where neighboring landowners work together to establish wildlife management goals and get on the same page. That was kind of how the job started, was working with co-ops and getting them formed and going and operational. But Beyond that, we've added the Deer Management Assistance Program. We're helping out Missouri Department of Conservation there with the DMAP program. That's been really cool of getting some landowners in there so where they can accomplish some good deer management goals of thinning some herds and getting their buck-to-doe ratio right and things like that. And then we also do a little bit of CWD sampling and testing, helping out, you know, MDC as well. So that's been fun. And then another thing they've added to our job description that I think has probably been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my career is the R3 initiative, or recruit, retain, reactivate hunters. And we've been doing several events here in the state of Missouri called Build the Fork events, where we actually take brand new adult hunters and get them out there and teach them all about deer, pretty much deer hunting 101, whitetail biology, all about the animals that they're pursuing. And then we take them out, get them the safety basics with whatever their weapon of choice, whether it be crossbows or firearms. And we take them out to the range, get them proficient with that weapon, and then we take them on their first deer hunt. And hopefully, if it all goes right, and sometimes it still goes right, but they get to harvest their first animal and or the first deer. And then we take them from there and we teach them all about how to field dress it, how to quarter their meat, the different cuts of meat, how to package it, all that good stuff. And along the way, we get to sample venison, different recipes as we go along. So it's been a really great program. Been really excited to get to do that. We actually were just featured in the most recent issue of the Missouri Conservationist magazine, where we took some senior deer hunters out.
I read that
and,
last night.
Some of those were brand new. Some of those were brand new deer hunters and in their 90s. And so such a fulfilling time to get people out there in the outdoors. That's the basis of my job and really great. But like I said, yeah, I was born in Branson. Still live in the area. The Ozarks is what I call home, and right here down on the Arkansas-Missouri line for my entire life. Did a brief stint down in Texas, just north of Houston, Texas, for a couple of years as an outdoor education programmer. Loved the job, but Texas was not my thing. So got back home to the Ozarks and loving it. Working for NDA has been fantastic, but previously in my career in Missouri, I worked for Missouri State Parks for a decade as a park naturalist and an assistant superintendent of a state park. And I mean, that kind of goes right into your question of what is my favorite thing about Missouri outdoors. And I think it's just, there's so much here. There's so much to offer. There's so many great places, picturesque places in the state to visit. Of course, working with state parks, I got to visit a lot of the really cool state parks across the state and see what the state actually has to offer. But just the whole diversity of landscapes is great. But we had the opportunity. I live on Table Rock Lake, and I can be in the water in 3 or 4 minutes and go out there. And there's never a bad day in the Missouri outdoors, because it's just, there's always something to do, whether you can hunt or fish, or go hiking, go visit a park. There's just so much out there that you can do and enjoy, and not everywhere is that way. And being in the urban environment in Houston, Texas, I got a real good dose of what it's like to not have the resources that we have here in Missouri. It just made me want to come home that much more.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, that's a very typical answer, you know, because, I mean, I almost don't want people to know about it, but I've said this a million times on our show. Missouri is like four different states all in one. You know, Kansas, let's say, Kansas is cool. Like, a lot of people say Kansas is boring. I actually think Kansas is pretty cool because you got the Flint Hills, southeast Kansas. Obviously, western Kansas sucks sometimes, you know, driving through it, but I still think it's got its own beauty. But, you know, in general, Kansas is Kansas, right? In general, Texas is Texas. I mean, you know, there's different, but like Missouri's got mountains. They've got flat-ass places. They've got huge river bluffs. They've got farm ground. I mean, you know, sometimes you feel like you're in Kansas. Sometimes you feel like you're in Tennessee. Sometimes you feel like you're in Iowa. Sometimes you feel like you're, you know, in big cities with, you know, KC and St. Louis. I mean, it's just kind of got everything a little bit for you. So, no, I agree with you. And that kind of – oh, by the way, I was going to say on that article in the Missouri Conservationist, I read that last night. Yeah. I won't say where I was when I read it because it's where I read my Missouri Conservationist, but let's just say it's on top of the back of our toilet, and that's where I read my magazines.
That's right.
And
good place to focus.
It's a good place to put the, you know, leave the phone out in the living room and go take care of business and do some nice reading. And I read that whole article, and it was that was really cool to see that lady. 92, was she? I can't remember.
She's 93. And now she's about to be 94, and she's already looking forward to this year. And now she has that on her bucket list. She wants to kill a deer. And that's something that we tried to figure out. Okay, we went with the crossbows last year, and she had a deer that was just right there out of range, and it just couldn't get a shot. But she was so excited about getting to see that deer and the whole opportunity. And the funny thing is, she said, the right after that happened, she goes, "Oh, I can't wait to call my sister." Well, then we find out she has a twin sister that lives over in the Carolinas. That's still alive. They're both 93. And she just couldn't wait to tell her sister all about her deer hunt. And I just thought, this is great. I wanted to get her a deer for her, but it just didn't happen last year. But we've changed it around, and this year we're going to be taking out rifles. We changed the dates that we're going, and that's up here in Ozark, Missouri. And we're going to be there with Miss Bessie again, and I'm going to hopefully try to get her a deer harvested this year for her 94th.
Well, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter how old, but that's been one of the coolest things that I've experienced in my life is taking people out hunting for their first time. I've got two sons who I've taken out for their first hunts. You know, one of the blessings that we've had on our podcast, you know, outside of just being able to talk to people like, you know, Shane and Matt Ross and my cousin Lindsay Thomas, who's not my cousin, but we make fun of, you know, say that because we've got the same last name, and like people with, you know, your association, people just all across the world, honestly, just people you would consider quote unquote average folks who aren't in this world, you still get to like see here the most cool stories. And the other thing that I've loved about doing our podcast is we've got to also take other people on their first respective hunts. You know, one of my most favorite moments was doing an event with Missouri Disabled Sportsmen last year. They did their first annual coyote hunt, and we got to take three you know, mobility impaired sportsmen out on their first time ever coyote hunting. That was cool. Wasn't successful. Same as, you know, Miss Bessie, but you know, it's about that. Andy got to take a young lady and her mom and dad on their first ever thermal coyote hunts. She actually was successful, the young girl. And it's just cool to hear about those stories. And, you know,
you say successful, and honestly, we didn't harvest a deer, but it was still successful. It was very successful.
Yeah,
we did several of those senior hunts last year, and the two that I was a part of and got to be a mentor, nobody harvested a deer, but they were still probably some of the most successful hunts that I've ever been on.
Yeah.
Definitely the most rewarding. And I mean, I can't wait to do it again this year and get some folks out there. The very first one I went on was just something else. The gentleman hadn't hunted in years and never thought that he would ever be able to hunt again. And to give him that opportunity, it just literally changed his whole outlook on life. Because he was pretty down in the dumps before. And, something like a deer hunt brings everybody together and gets them out there to enjoy the great outdoors, and just to be able to be out there in the blind and have that opportunity again, whether you harvest something or not.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it was just, like I said, it's probably one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my career.
Success is in the eye of the beholder, because you know, and I meant the same thing by that, right? Success only in the term of not harvesting a deer, but how many times have you went out deer hunting? Maybe you've been stressed at work, life's been stressful, kids have been sick at home, you know, whatever. How many times have you went out hunting and really could just give a crap if you kill a deer that day?
Most of them.
You just want to go sit in the tree stand, detach from the world, you know, detach from these things that, you know, are always on our hips and cell phones and things like that, and just smell the woods, hear the sounds, think about life. I can't tell you how many times that I have been totally unaware that there's a deer around me because I'm just in the moment, and all of a sudden I just heard something, and you look over and there's a doe 20 yards to your left or whatever. And you know, I guess that's one way to keep still is when you're just calm. But yeah, so success doesn't mean kill, right? I mean, I've got a goal every year that I want to do certain things, but if I can get out and hunt just one time, that was successful.
Yep.
And then
harvesting an animal is just the cherry on top. I mean, if it happens, it happens. It's great. We like to provide, you know, meat for the freezer, but, so it's kind of like fishing too. You know, it's called fishing, not catching. And some of the best fishing trips, we never caught a thing. But, you know, getting to get out there and enjoy the great outdoors and just soak it all in. You know, some people it's almost spiritual, being out there in the outdoors, and you feel closer to the Lord and things like that. And, gives you a chance to pray and be quiet, things like that. I mean, that definitely hits home, and you hear nature just screaming about the Creator. That's for some people, and other people, it's not that way. And I feel that way just about, you know, anytime I get to get out there and have that opportunity. And then on top of that, getting to share it with somebody is just another level.
Yeah.
And, this last year was pretty big year for me. Is I not so much for me personally. I didn't kill the biggest deer I've ever killed or anything like that, but, these events with the seniors, I also got to take my wife, hunting, and she harvested her first deer, and I got to be right there in line with her.
Yeah.
And help her go and harvest her first deer. And, that's just something that you'll never take that from me. And it's just something I'll cherish forever.
Well, every hunter has different goals, right? I mean, I think as you grow in your hunting career, let's call it, your goals change. I still want to kill a big deer next year.
For sure.
But my last 2 years, I've taken consecutive sons on their first hunts. So 2 years ago, my son Caden got to go hunting as a hunter instead of just with me. And then last year, my other son Chase got to be a hunter last year. The only thing I really gave to you-know-whats about those years was making it a good experience for them. Now, I wanted them to harvest an animal, sure. And they both did. And so, like, everything I wanted to happen for my hunting season those years was taken care of when they both were successful in harvesting an animal. Now, I was still hunting. And the year Caden killed his deer, I did harvest a nice buck. Actually, that guy right there. Mm-hmm. But last year, I didn't kill anything. Not a single deer. And I made a lot of decisions not to certain times of the year. But as soon as Chase harvested his buck, it was like, I mean, I'm playing with house money at this point. My son had a successful day. Both my sons made better shots than I've ever made on a deer when they killed their first deer. And, you know, it was great. And, you know, I butcher Bible verses a lot. But what is the one that says, be still and know? Right?
Yeah, I mean, be still and know that I'm God. I'm not sure where that's found either. Yeah. It's definitely one.
It's nice when you're in the woods being still, you know. So,
for sure.
Speaking of harvesting deer, the topic we're going to kind of get into today actually came up. I think I'm going to give Micah the credit. I'm pretty sure it was his idea. Andy, if it was your idea, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure it was on Micah's list of ideas, but in our area, which we're in West Central Missouri, so a few hours north of you, we've had 2 years in a row, 2 summers in a row that have been pretty dang dry. I know, like, as of 2 or 3 nights ago, we were like 10.5 inches behind the annual average for rainfall in our area this year, and last year was no different. So Micah brought up the idea of, well, how does a drought, even though we might not technically be in one anymore, how does a drought affect antler growth? So that's what we're kind of going to get into today. I guess we can just kind of kick it off wherever you want to, but what are some of the things that you see when it relates to dry weather and antlers?
I mean, you talk about drought, and, you know, a drought can be at any time. But the biggest factor here is if it's a drought during the antler growing season, which is, you know, after they drop their antlers, they shed their antlers in late winter, all the way up till pretty much, you know, coming up here pretty quick, the end of August, before they turn to hard antler. I mean, they've got approximately 200 days of antler growing. If it's during that time and there's a drought there, you know, bottom line is drought's going to affect plant growth. And when you affect plant growth, you're going to affect the nutrition. And we always talk about antlers being a product of age, nutrition, and genetics. Genetics, you either have them or you don't. You really can't control that a whole lot out in the wild setting. But we can control age and nutrition. So you let that deer get to its full antler potential of, you know, 6.5 years old. Okay, that's one thing, but we can control the nutrition. But if you're sitting here in a drought during that antler growing season, that could have an effect. He may not grow as big of a set of antlers just because he's not going to have the nutrition that he would have because the plants aren't growing. So, I mean, boils down to without the food, it's going to cause a dent. It's going to cause a problem. So
that's
if you, you know, so, kind of going off of, you know, Matt Ross's, I work with him. He's my supervisor with the National Deer Association. And, you know, he's really been, I mean, that guy's a deer genius when it comes to things about like this. And one of the things that he talks about is Forbes. And he wrote an article all about what deer eat. Great read if you haven't read it. But Forbes create, you know, that's about 70% of a deer's diet. And, you know, Forbes being non-grasses or sedges or rushes, it's a herbaceous plant. It's a non-woody plant. So we think of a lot of the stuff that you hear the term old field growth or early successional growth. As long as it's that non-woody stuff, most of that is Forbs. And they're very highly nutritious, high in protein and different minerals that deer have to have for antler growth. And that makes up about 70% of our diet. And if you hit those Forbs with a drought to where they can't grow during that antler growing season, absolutely going to have an effect on antler growth because that's the majority of their diet. Yeah. So not only are you missing the quantity of food that they're getting because it's going to set them back, they can't grow. If you think that's an issue, go look at your food plots right now that you tried to plant because they're probably not much to them if you're in a drought. So if you're relying on food plots, you're probably going to have a rough year just based on if your sole thing is providing food from your food plots, you're going to have a rough year anyway because that drought knocked all the plant growth. But it's also going to knock back the quality of the food that they're eating because those forbs are just trying to grow and they're not going to be as nice, new, succulent growth. And seem to be more nutritious when it's that new growth. That's what deer pick up on. They're selective when they feed. They go in there and they pick the most nutritious new shoots and go in there and selectively eat the stuff that's the best for them and has the highest nutritional value. But when the forbs are just focusing on trying to survive, let alone trying to prosper and flourish because they don't have the moisture they need to grow, and the deer are going to get the least or less nutrition out of those forbs. So that's the biggest key as far as antler growth. that I could see.
So that was kind of, and you basically already answered it, but that was kind of one of my arguments almost against it affecting them is, you know, we're in a drought. I don't know that we actually are. So nobody, you know, yell at me. In my opinion, I'm looking at my pond. My pond's 5 freaking foot low for the last 2 years. It's dry here. That's what I'm saying, okay? But I still see plants all over the place, right? Like, it's still summertime. It's still green out here. So my argument was, well, how's that? They're still eating. But one of my questions is, and so you said they're selective. So the plants that they might want to eat might not be as healthy, right? They're just trying to survive, let alone be beautiful and vivacious and all that. So it's like, you know, eating a small apple instead of two large ones. You're not going to get as much out of the apple. But the other thing that, you know, kind of one of my arguments was, but look at these weeds. Like, these weeds aren't, you know, woody growth. They're huge. You know, will a deer, and I think I might already know the answer to this, but if the food source that a deer is hoping to browse on a certain day isn't doing great, and there's stuff that they don't typically mess with, will they change their eating habits based on what their body is hoping to get nutritionally?
I mean, the best answer is always, it depends.
Sure.
Everybody hates that answer, but it depends. It depends. Usually deer are focusing more on the new growth, and that new growth is because the plant is pushing those minerals and growing and flourishing. But, you know, like you said, a lot of these so-called weeds are really just going crazy and taking over, and they're huge. Usually deer focus on the new growth or the shorter stuff, and that's where it's the most nutritious because it's pushing all that stuff out there toward the leaves. And since deer are browsers, you know, they're eating those leaves and things like that. But when they don't have the moisture content, they're not getting that new growth. So the deer are forced to eat the older, less nutritious stuff, like, you know, the stems and the bigger leaves. And a lot of times that's just, it's not that great, not as nutritious as that new growth. Case in point, deer love oak weed. And I've seen it on our place at pokeweed when it first comes up. I mean, just the short little plants. I mean, deer hammer that stuff. So high in protein. I mean, it rivals really any kind of food plot, you know, plant you could think of. It rivals in protein percentage, usually higher. But pokeweed, often overlooked, but it's a native plant, and a lot of people call it a weed. It even has weed in the name, even though a weed is technically just a plant that's not wanted wherever you're wanting it. So I really wouldn't call it a weed because
that's where it's supposed to be.
Some of that. Yeah, you want some of that. The deer absolutely want it because it's for them, it's delicious and highly nutritious, exactly the time when they need it. It's usually one of the first things to come up, and man, they hit that stuff when it's really, really small, and they hit it hard. But if it gets past that point where it doesn't get browsed early, it can get really big. And I mean, it could be 6-7 feet tall and have huge leaves, and a deer won't touch it. So when you get in a drought situation and stuff like that, the plant can be big and just older leaves. They're just not going to be as nutritious as the new growth. So when it's dry out there, you don't get a whole lot of new growth. Plants just trying to maintain and survive.
Yeah.
So that's one of the bigger factors there on that kind of stuff.
Well, when I asked that question, let me preface this with, I don't actually know if it's true or not, because I haven't really paid that much attention in years past. But this year, since it's dry out, I've really been paying attention when I'm going into work on my areas or dump my mineral, which I'm in a county that doesn't have CWD, so I can still supplemental feed and do mineral. When I'm going in, I'm paying attention to the crops. You know, we have obviously we're in a crop heavy area up here. We got black dirt up here, stuff grows. Well, to me, just to me, it looks like our crops are getting hammered a lot harder than normally. Like, it looks like, you know, elk are out here. You know what I'm saying? And they're not. So that was where that kind of that question originated for me is, I wonder if it's because, you know, the deer would rather be eating, you know, pokeweed or other browse, but it's just not doing very good. So then they're defaulting. Right. We know they love beans in the summer. We know that. Right. And corn. But are they in it more because the pokeweed's not doing so good or other stuff they like to browse on during the summertime, early spring? So that's where that question kind of originated is,
yeah,
will they, I guess, change their habits? You know, and like, really it was more of, will they eat something that they will never have touched before? Now, obviously, if a deer's going to die, they'll eat whatever they need to not die. I get that. I mean, if you and I were dying and there was a raccoon on the side of the road and we'd never, I'd eat it because I need to not die. That's a different story.
Right.
But if they're just not getting what they need, would they totally switch up what they're doing? If there was no other options, like, all right, I'm a deer today. I want to eat a pokeweed. It's not available. Not cool. I'm going to move to some soybeans. Oh, they're not available. I'm in Southwest Missouri. Nobody has beans down there. Whatever, right? Okay, well, what's next? This. It's not available. Well, now I'm going to start eating this thing I've never eaten before. You know, will a deer continue to, I don't know, like you said, they're selective. Do they,
yep,
do they go about it that way? Obviously, it'd be nice if we could talk to them in English and ask them. But, right, you know, what have you kind of noticed?
That's one of the conundrums right there is, how in the world do they know which ones are the most nutritious? How, yeah, do they know I'm going to eat that leaf instead of that leaf that's right next to it? How do they know I'm going to eat that plant and not eat that plant? That's a million-dollar question. If we knew that, man, we would all be way better hunters for sure, way better deer managers, way better habitat managers, because we would know what we needed to provide. They're so selective and they do move around, and somehow, and that's the great thing about deer that makes them such an amazing animal, is they have that ability to pick and choose what's the best for them. And, they're going to be eating things and, that you might not normally see them eat because that's what's available. And that kind of goes back to, you know, the quantity is not there, but they're more reliant on availability. If it's not there, then they can't eat it. They got to move on and find something else.
Yeah.
The other thing that I've heard is, you know, going back to the quantity part of it and the selectivity of what they're getting to eat, you know, hungry deer are going to move more because they have to. So the drought might actually be in our favor as hunters, because deer might move more because they're hungry, because they're trying to find what's out there. Mm-hmm. Because what they normally eat, like you said, may not be there. Maybe they're going after pokeweed, but it's not there because of the drought or whatever. Whatever factor it may be, if that plant's not there, it's not available, they got to move on to something else. But that gets them moving. And as hunters, we like it when deer move, because that gives us a better chance to try to intercept. So that's another thing to think about too, is it could actually be helpful as far as the hunting side of things, because the hungry deer is going to move. Whereas if they had everything they needed all in one spot, and it was a great year, banner year for, you know, for the moisture content, and everything was growing and flourishing, maybe that deer doesn't have to move. Maybe it just stays right there. Doesn't have to go anywhere. And I've seen that in years where there's a big bumper mast crop. Like if there's a big acorn crop, big white oak acorn crop, I literally watched a deer get up out of his bed. He went about 10 feet, walked around, ate until he was full, went right back down and bedded right back down about 3 feet from where he was before. And he was there half the day. And I'm sitting there, and he's just out of bow range. There was nothing I could do but watch. And he did that a couple of times until finally he was just like, all right, I think I'm going to go do whatever I want to now. And he just walked out. But if everything's there where they need it, where they're bedding, if the food's that close, they have no reason to move. But in a drought situation where plants aren't flourishing, that availability's not there, they're going to have to move because they got to find something to eat.
Yeah.
You know, a deer consumes roughly 2,000 pounds of food per year. So if you think about each deer out there eating a ton, literally a ton of food, they're going to be moving around. They're going to be, they eat a lot. And so they got to move around to find the food, and the drought stunts everything that's growing that they would normally eat. They're going to be moving way more.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that makes sense. It's just like a guy like me that looks at stuff kind of oddly sometimes is, you know, we're in a drought, and Andy, who is a farmer, and my father-in-law, who is a farmer, might smack me for saying this, but every damn night I drive by a bean field in our county. There's dozens of deer out in these bean fields, and the bean fields look fine to me. Yeah, it's dry outside, but, well, they're green, and those deer are hammering the hell out of them. How can a deer not succeed there? Well, another thing that kind of crept into my mind, I guess, is maybe they're having to eat more to get what they need, which means their body's having to work harder to digest things. And then another thing I thought was water. Well, maybe they're not getting as much water as they got, because if we are in a dry situation, one property I hunt in particular has a dry creek running through it, and that's all. And that creek hasn't had water in it in months.
Yeah.
So I don't think deer have a problem finding water here, but I don't know that. Maybe they won't walk that way to that pond over there because something's dangerous that they think's over there. But I have seen a lot of people on social media, and I'll be honest, it has perked my interest, that have been installing these little ponds. Some of them look like literally like the kiddie pool. They'll dig a hole and put the kiddie pool down in it, or just a trough, or just dig out, you know, the ground the size of this table or something and fill it up with some water. What are your thoughts on you know, kind of giving them, like we give them supplemental feed, giving them an easier water source? Do you think that helps a deer in a drought situation, or will they find the water if they need it?
It can't hurt. I mean, I've seen mixed reviews on it, honestly, and I could see where it could help if there's not a water source, or if we are in a drought year like this, where, hey, that's you're just providing something that they need. I mean, the whole idea is you're wanting to keep that deer on your property so that hopefully you can harvest that deer later on in the season. And one way you can do that, and this is something with a lot of the government cost share assistance, you can actually make wildlife watering holes and things like that. It can't hurt. And I've seen it to where that is the water source. That's where it's close to their bedding area. You just made the water source that much more available than them having to walk all the way down to the lake, or walk down to that pond, or walk down to that creek. If you put it right up there where their bedroom's at, it's kind of like that story I just told. That buck, he doesn't have to go anywhere. He has everything he needs. He has food, water, cover, space, everything that an animal needs to survive. And you just put it right there so he can be lazy. He doesn't have to go that far. The only thing that you have to be careful with in drought situations and making small ponds, if you're not doing the liners and things like that, is creating that muddy habitat, that real shallow, because of hemorrhagic disease. Mm-hmm. I mean, hemorrhagic disease is in those drought areas, and what happens is that little fly, that little midge fly, gets in there and it survives in those shallow, you know, muddy pools where other things can't because the temperatures get so high. But it just kind of increases the risk factor for hemorrhagic disease, and we don't want to do that. So that would be that my only thing to steer clear of is be careful in how you build your little watering hole. Make sure that you're not just opening the door to the hemorrhagic disease to come in because of how you built it. You can take measures to build your pond differently so that doesn't happen. And those little pond liners work just fine.
I've seen some people literally just digging out the ground and putting in a pool, like a little kid pool or a little bit larger version of that. And I guess you can do that
where you're at. I can't dig a hole more than 3 inches here.
Yeah. You got to worry about rocks.
It's all rocks. We don't dig holes. That doesn't happen. If you can dig a hole, that works too.
Yeah. Well, I actually thought about EHD in that situation. Wouldn't it suck? Like, you're trying to give them water and then you give them all EHD. But because I'm starting to see where people are putting in water source or a watering hole as a destination food plot, almost like you would. Right. I'm trying to kill a deer on this food plot. People are putting water holes in as this is my kill hole. Like this is my kill water hole. And it makes sense. Like if you've got this 3-acre food plot, and then you got water on the end of it, chances are decent. Like, I've read, I can't remember what it is. You might know the number. I read how many quarts of a day of water a deer drinks or needs.
Not off the top of my head, I know.
And I know it's high. Like, they got to drink water. Yeah. It has to happen. So if they're going to come into this food plot or something, the I don't know if it's statistical chances, but the chances of that deer working its way to that water are probably pretty good. Because it needs to drink it. It has to have it. But, I was just curious from a drought standpoint if that would be effective or, same thing with food. They got to have water. They'll travel to get it probably. And in Missouri, you don't have to travel far to find water most places.
And especially, like you said, if you're using a salt lick or a mineral lick site in the places where you can, it automatically makes that deer thirsty. I mean, anything salty makes you thirsty. Deer crave the salt, and they crave the water. And if you make that available for them, even if it's a man-made structure with water in it, you just upped your odds and increase the chance that you could intercept where that deer is going to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. Another thing I had written down here was from a drought perspective, do you think it can have a cumulative effect on a herd? So, like, drought this year. Now, we're in 2 years of dryness, but we got a drought, let's say, in 2023. Could that have an effect on 2024? I'm more thinking about, like, the does in this situation. Like, are we having as many fawns hit the ground? Are they able to produce? Have there ever been studies that you know of or – how do you feel like it can affect it from 1 year to the next?
When you get into, kind of shifting gears from antler growth, and we're just talking about, survivability and droughts having an effect on deer, period. It absolutely has a bigger effect on your does and more importantly, your fawns, because fawn survival is hard enough as it is. But then when you take away the water, you take away the nutrition, you take away all that stuff that the doe needs to produce milk, to produce higher nutrition for that fawn, he's probably going to end up throwing a single instead of twins like he normally would, so that she can give that fawn the best chance of survival. But then you also have to think about she has to take care of herself first. Mm-hmm. And if that means that she has to stop taking care of the fawn, then that's what that means. It's her survival comes first, and then the fawn survival comes next. The one thing that you can see, and I know there's been some studies done on it, that when fawns are born in drought times, it can have an effect on skeletal, development. And if you think about a buck fawn that's born during a drought, we had an old article. I remember the title of it. I'll never forget it. Fawns are born with one hoof in the grave. I mean, there's so many factors against them. This is just another one. And maybe that buck fawn is not going to have the best start to life. So he may never get to be a really, really large buck because of how he started, because of all the development that goes on in those first 3 years of life, it's really tough. So it was to be year after year after year throughout, it could compound it, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
But for fawns, I think it's already got them on the wrong side of the pendulum there for survival, and I would say just that buck may not ever be a 200 incher if he's born during, you know, bad drought years, because his mama didn't have the nutrition to be able to raise him and his twin. And maybe it just ended up being him, and now he's already at a deficiency nutritionally wise because his mama's not getting what she needs to raise him with the milk and protein and everything that he needs. And then it's going to make him smaller, things like that. All those factors lead to higher fawn mortality. It also takes away the, and it goes back to that, plants can't grow without water. So you're taking away a cover problem there too. So fawn doesn't have cover to hide in. It's more susceptible to predation. So many things that go on with plants not being able to grow, going all the way back to not having the water to grow the plants. That makes the mama not have enough to be able to produce the right milk or nutritional milk. So she might have one fawn instead of two. And then that one fawn's at a disadvantage because it's not getting the higher nutrition value because the plants are there, not there. The quality's not there. The quantity's not there. And then once they, if they do make it through that stage, then the plants are still not there because it's still a grow, you know, when they're getting weaned. So they're still not getting the nutrition when they first start growing up. So they're smaller. They're going to have a harder time growing up, getting through the winter. If they make it through the winter, mm-hmm. they're never going to be, I mean, everything's against them. All the odds are against them when they're starting out like that.
I thought of that question because I'm seeing it right now. I've never actually paid attention as much as I have to one fawn in a year that I am this year. So Micah and I share a hunting property, and this is our first year there. And so we naturally put out some mineral and cameras, and we have this doe with twins. And the first time I ever got a picture of this fawn, and this will be, the question on the end of this, because I'm wondering if that has to do with the drought, but it was a nighttime picture, and he or she, it looked like she had like a patch on her eye. Like the eye was a different color than the rest of the deer in a nighttime photo. So like in a nighttime photo, so it was black and white, basically. The fawn was totally white, and then its eye was dark. I'm like, it looks like a dog with a spot on its eye, you know, like a patch. And I thought, okay, well, the next day I see it again, and it's a little bit far out, and there's something up with its eye. Something's going on. And so every day I'm waiting for this perfect picture of this fawn that shows me that side of its face so I can get the HD photo on the cell cam. I can request an HD photo, and then I'll know. Well, come to find out, I ended up posting this picture on our Instagram or Facebook, and I said, what do y'all think this is? And every single person is like, it's full of ticks. That entire eye is covered in ticks. And then I start looking at it, and yeah, that poor thing has ticks just surrounding everything. And mama's got ticks all over the backs of her ears. Then you start looking, and you're like, yep, mama's ears are covered, which, you know, not that uncommon. The brother or sister or the twin fawn has some ticks. Can a drought cause ticks to be worse? Or, I mean, we know ticks suck, obviously, but yep. I've never seen a fawn that bad where I'm wondering if he or she's going to even make it, because I mean, that's got to be miserable with her eye like that. But can a drought affect the tick population too, where they're going to just explode on us?
Yeah, I mean, they've done some studies with ticks and prescribed fire and, you know, knocking them back and things like that. I think it's going to be right along those same lines if you think about it. But the years after the prescribed fire can almost be worse if you don't do something about it. So you're going to have an explosion of ticks. They don't have the vegetation to hang out on. What are they going to hang out on? Whatever's there. and it's those deer or any of those critters that are walking around, they're just looking for a host. Because I mean, when do you get ticks? When you're walking through vegetation, and if there's not that much vegetation, all the ticks are on what little vegetation's there, and they're going to get on you. That's the worst seed ticks I think I've ever gotten was when I was in a real dry year and walked through what little vegetation was there, and my pants were just covered.
Yep.
And I think I just threw those pants away and didn't even mess with it. It wasn't worth messing with. But absolutely, on the answer to that question, I think that a drought can actually make it worse on the animals because they jump on them quicker.
I've never followed a fawn so closely. I mean, every day I check our pictures. I'm looking for it, just to, you know, are you still good? And right now, he or she looks fine. I mean, I don't know. She looks about the same size as the other one. Everything looks okay, but you know, and it might not be affecting the deer whatsoever. But it looks horrid, you know. And so I'm just like, me and Micah were talking about: is there anything we could go do? Like, could we put something out with the mineral that would help, you know, get them ticks off of it, or something they could rub on, like cows have those damn, you know, fly things they rub on their backs on and stuff. And I'm like, man, is there something we could do for that fawn or for all of them, just to get those ticks back? But,
you know, early in my career, I actually raised deer in a kind of a high fence area. And, it wasn't for hunting or anything, but it was just for viewing. But we had some fawns and we had a real pretty bad drought year. And, I went in there. That was what I was talking about. I got the worst seed ticks I've ever got. I had a doe that abandoned one of her fawns because she couldn't take care of both of them. So I had to bottle raise one of them while she tried to take care of the other one. And I had the worst tick problems on those deer inside that enclosure that I've ever seen. And I haven't even seen it that bad, even, you know, out in the wild. But in this case, I tried to figure out how to do the same thing, just exactly like you said. How am I going to get rid of these ticks? And I tried to set up a cattle rub, and those deer didn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
And so I had to funnel them down into like a 3-foot wide gate. I had to put fencing over the top of it so they couldn't just jump over it. And I literally had to force them to go through this tiny spot where they might accidentally touch the rub that had I think it was like permethrin or something on it.
Yeah.
And they accidentally had to touch it, and that's the only way that I got those ticks to stop getting on the deer. But out in the wild, I don't know if you'd ever get them to go. You can't funnel them like I could in that enclosure.
I wonder if I could go quote-unquote hunting one night with a bottle of permethrin, just waiting for them to come to the mineral, and then as soon as they're down, just that's about the only way I can think it'd work.
I mean, you could. I've seen some people that have had some success doing that. If you're using a feeder or at a mineral site, they can put stuff up there to where in order for the deer to go in and get a bite to eat out of the feeder or something, that it touches them with the permethrin or whatever,
and
like a cattle rub. I've seen that work, but you know, here in Missouri, with the laws that we have in most of the state, you know, being under CWD regulations, it's not even really an option,
right?
And you can't really do anything.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Well, I'm interested to see how this fawn does. You know, like I said, even if, you know, listeners, you can certainly send in your ideas. I'm sure someone's talking to the speaker right now, going, hey, "This is what I did, and it worked." Hey, I'm happy to hear it, but man, it's just, you know, sometimes you got to let nature do what nature's going to do. But, you know, it's an interesting topic for this time of year, just because we're definitely being hit by it. I know other areas of Missouri, I think near like Sedalia, I was hearing from somebody near Sedalia, mm-hmm. it's even worse than we were. I know they got rain too. We've actually been, we're recording with Shane on August 4th. This might not come out for a little while, but the past few days have been wet here. Like, it's actually rained, but the damage has already been done, right? Like the drought, quote unquote, has already affected, you know. I know my father-in-law is already talking about the corn not being, you know, very good because it's already turning this color, and if it's not dark green still, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so that's already been done. But it's just a really interesting topic because, you know, hunters like me sometimes have specific goals. And one of my specific goals is to get a nice buck this year. Well, you think about that. You're like, if it's dry, is his antlers going to be good? I read another article that says even if their antlers grow, sometimes the density of the bone is not as good. And so they're more susceptible to break when they're fighting with other bucks. So all these things, you know, running through my mind.
I've done that a couple of times where it's, you know, the buck that I was after, and I finally, you know, get him to where I think I can cross paths with him and pattern him, so to speak, you know, during that time, just to get him to come up there, and he's broken three or four tines off, and you're like, well, now what?
Yeah.
I mean, do you still harvest him even without all the tines? Most hunters probably not. But yeah, absolutely can affect that bone density and cause more breakage, breaking those tines off, because that happens, you know, whenever the antler growth season, and we've had a really dry July, which is one of the biggest months of antler growth, and it's not going to make that antler bone density as heavy, and it's going to lead to more breakage for sure.
Yeah. So bucks, if you're listening, don't fight. Get it? I know they're not going to listen. I'm just kidding. Nobody understood the joke. Yeah, but that's kind of the, you know, the topic today. I've kind of thought of all the questions I was thinking of asking. We pretty much went through. What I mean, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you think would be important about droughts and deer success?
I mean, the other part there is, and we didn't touch on it too much. I touched on a little bit about the quality and the quantity of the forage just not being there. Both, you're losing them both in a drought because stuff's just not growing. So not only are you not getting the quantity, but you're not getting the quality. And going off of that side of the quantity part, when I said earlier that deer eat a ton of food or a ton of forage per year for each deer, that just makes it even more of a big deal to make sure that you're meeting your harvest goals as far as how many antlerless deer are you taking. Because in a lot of places, and that's what the DMAP program is all about, is making sure you have the right population of deer that the habitat that can support, or what we call the carrying capacity. And in a drought, when you're taking away all of that forage, the quantity of forage, that's less mouths to feed. Well, that means you're probably going to have to take out more deer to keep your population in check, because they're eating so much. If you already got an overpopulation problem, well, now they don't have the food that they need, and it's just less food for more mouths is not a good combination. So it's something to keep in mind for this coming season, to make sure you're meeting your harvest goals. And if you are part of a DMAP program or something like that, or if you're in a co-op that has management goals as far as how many, you know, antlerless deer you need to take, you might want to consider bumping that up a little bit this year because of the drought, because there's just not the quality or quantity of forage that they need, and just too many mouths to feed. So maybe you need to put those deer in the freezer instead of letting them go out there and eat what food's left.
They still taste good. Okay, well, Shane, before we hop off, why don't you tell everybody how they can, you know, get involved with the National Deer Association, some of the stuff you guys got coming up, you know, anything you want to kind of talk about there?
Yeah, I mean, I always point people to our website, deerassociation.com, and we've got so much information on there. It's crazy. Anything deer-related you could think of, whether it's, you know, food plots or hunting techniques, everything in between, recipes for venison, all kinds of stuff on there. Highly recommend it. We also, I kind of talked earlier about our Field to Fork program. If you're interested in becoming a mentor for one of those, or maybe you want to get involved and be a first time hunter, and maybe hop in on one of our Field to Fork events, you can get online and on our deerassociation.com and check that out. You can get in touch with me. I'd be happy to help you with any of your cooperative stuff, help you form a new co-op, maybe help with a co-op you've already got going, whether it's in Missouri or not. But myself, and we actually have a Northern Missouri counterpart, Cole Gander, who covers the northern half of the state. I cover the southern half of the state. But we help each other out with any of the events and getting co-ops going. But anything you can do, check out deerassociation.com. Has all that information. You can get our email and everything on there as well. My name's spelled funny, so it looks like Cheyenne, but it's actually Shane. C-H-E-Y-N-E at deerassociation.com. And if you got any questions, feel free to give me a call, text, email, whatever you got to do. I'd be happy to talk with you about deer or anything deer related.
All right. Well, our Missouri's very own Shane Motzenbacher. Say that right again. Thanks for coming on and talking about drought in Missouri. Appreciate your time today, man.
Yep, enjoyed it.
All right, see ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.